Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 556th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
A lot of emphasis on that. Nice.
Yeah, no, well, I want people to realize that's who I am.
Yeah, for sure. I won't forget it now. Yeah. So I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and the director of practice support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada. I'm also an adjunct professor at the University of Alberta. And in reference to the college and the University of Alberta, we have with us a peer team member, Betsy.
Hi, my name is Betsy Thomas. I'm a pharmacist with the College of Family Physicians of Canada, where I work as a clinical evidence expert. I am also an assistant adjunct professor at the Department of Family Medicine. Yes, it's very impressive at the U of A. Mike is my boss, and my declared conflict for this topic is that I have dry eyes. Mike makes me work way too hard.
Oh, yeah. You're never off your computer.
I just slide that in there. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, Betsy, I thought you said that working with me has made you cry. So,
yeah.
Almost I'm providing a curative agent.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Dry eyes.
That's a good
really
point.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
So, being so miserable as a boss.
Yeah. So, if you guys are trying to figure out what the heck we're going to talk about, I'm going to give you a title because you guys came up with a clever title. I thought it was very good. It was not a dry eye, but how about if I try and say it correctly? Not a dry eye in the house, looking into artificial tears. That's a good title. And as I was doing a little bit of background, I was looking at a review of this thing outside of what you guys had done. And there was a line that I highlighted that I thought I would start off with. That the issue around all of this, and this is a quote, both practitioners and patients are faced with a bewildering array of different products with varying ingredients and little or no clear way of knowing which is the most effective. And that was the comment. And that's, I think, maybe where you guys decided to write something about this.
You know, actually, I have one of the reasons my curiosity about this topic was piqued is because I had a family member, or I have a family member who has severely dry eyes.
Right.
And it felt like he was just coming home with a new bottle of the newest drops, the new and improved drops. And some of them have been quite costly. And it just made me wonder, is there any evidence that actually these newer drops or any of the drops work better than others? So that's kind of how this topic came about as a tool.
And really the question is, it's a simple one, is do they work for dry eyes? I mean, it's a pretty simple one. So you guys obviously delved right into the evidence. So why don't you just let everyone know what you guys found?
Sure. So we found several systematic reviews, but what we focused on for our tool was looking for any trials that have reported patient-oriented outcomes. So there's lots of different objective outcomes that can be reported for dry eyes. For example, there's something called the tear breakup time, and Mike and I like this because the acronym is TBUT.
I'm sure Mike came up with that.
No, it was the researchers who look into dry eyes, but there were a lot. And TBUT was, we spent a lot of time, Betsy, like just trying to figure out how, because there is such a collection of so many outcomes and so many different products that it was difficult to decide what direction to take. And I think one of our overriding principles in the peer group is if you're faced in this dilemma, just look to what is the most relevant patient-oriented outcome rather than, and it was hard to let go of the TBUT score because
as it always is.
Yeah, but we really did want to focus on do patients feel better? Do they think their dry eyes got better? So we found... So we started with artificial tears versus placebo or no treatment. And shockingly, we were just, I don't know, shockingly, maybe Mike wasn't shocked, but there was such limited evidence. So there was two systematic reviews that looked at between 43 to 64 RCTs. And again, we were focusing on those patient-oriented outcomes. And most of the trials excluded, just as a caveat, most of them excluded post-surgical and contact lens wearers. And what we found was that there was two RCTs from those that we could find that compared artificial tears versus placebo or no treatment.
One in 30, Betsy. One in 30 that was actually figuring out, do they actually even work? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So the first one looked at 304 patients, and they were looking at symptoms like dryness, soreness, scratchiness, and they evaluated this on a scale of 0 to 15, with 15 meaning worse dry eyes. And these patients started off kind of in the middle of the road, so about at 8. And after 4 weeks, they found that patients who were using sodium hyaluronic drops were able to drop from approximately eight to about 5.7 versus to 6.1 with saline drops. So this was statistically significant, but as you can see, it's only a 0.4 difference. So it's not clinically different.
Yeah, no. And I think, you know, I would have thought that, you know, if I was just to think about this as an outsider, which is pretty much what I'm doing, because I wasn't part of this tools for practice, I would have thought if these were really pretty effective, they wouldn't have to study 300 patients. You should be able to show, if they work in the majority of people, you should be able to show this with a small number of people. I think it points out very clearly that what you're saying is they were able to show with enough people a statistical difference, but probably not clinically important. And that's about, that is the main study we have, right?
That's the main study we have. And we were struggling, right, Mike, with even the term placebo in this group, because you know, when you're giving people saline drops, you're putting something wet into a dry eye. And so that's probably going to give an effect more than a true placebo. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, Mike, if you had any other thoughts.
That was it. We debate. I remember us probably having, between the three of us and the other author here is Jessica Kirkwood, and the three of us debated what is a placebo in this our first step was, how does it compare to, you know, a placebo? But that's different than doing nothing, particularly in this case. And because the placebo here has an effect in and of itself, it's a water solution. So yeah, this was a really tricky tools for practice, something that you think would be pretty straightforward when you actually start to reflect on it. It was harder than we thought it would be. And figuring out these scales, oh my goodness, we spent so much time figuring out these scales.
But I think we see the same thing in other, with not, I was going to say other dermatological, I know it's different, but dermatologic, how do you compare something that's got an active ingredient, but you want to use the base, which may also have an effect, right? But I think it's a really important question, because the concept of if you were to, you know, just use anything, it might be saline drops, which would be very inexpensive and easily accessible and blah, blah, blah. So I think it's not because we can't have a true placebo, I think it's a good comparator, and it's very unfortunate. There aren't a lot of these studies.
It raises a great point though, right? If it's just saline and you're not getting a clinically meaningful difference from that. Mm-hmm. That raises a lot of questions about the different products.
It's a
good place to start. And I think there's one more RCT, mm-hmm. Betsy.
There was. This one was much smaller. And again, so this was of 27 computer users. And this trial, another thing, many things made us chuckle throughout this tools for practice. First was T-butt. Then this one was, you know, an RCT. And the thing, when we looked at the baseline of the patients that were enrolled, these 27 computer users, many of them didn't even classify as having dry eyes. So they had normal eyes. And so what they were doing was they're comparing three different artificial tears to no product. And what they found was that all the interventions, including the no product arm, reduced patient symptoms by the end.
Nice.
And there was, and there was no difference between the groups. And they looked at it at various time points, and there was no difference at any time point.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd have my hat more on the first study than this one. But
yeah, exactly.
But you do have to report it, because it is, you know, they did actually have sort of a placebo-y thing.
Yeah, they had a no product,
which is
actually helpful too. But it's pretty funny that they I remember this one when we were figuring it out and they were talking about the treatment of dry eyes. It was right in the title. And then we got partway in and we're like, wait a minute, what's the scale out of? What were they on the scale? And then this realization that, wait a minute, they have at most incredibly mild dry eyes.
Yeah.
which you go, normally we complain that, well, you know, that trials put in the sickest people to make sure you can show a benefit, but you know.
Yeah, these guys know it was the opposite.
Yeah, they
put in people with healthy eyes.
And shockingly, they all felt better.
Yeah.
That was even better.
Yeah, it's, and you know what? It's because it's so difficult to make. It must really show that they work, because it's very difficult to make an asymptomatic patient feel better.
I know, and no product worked to make people feel better.
Yeah, I know. Just, yeah,
it's a fascinating outcome. Yeah. But there were so many comparisons between the products. Right, Betsy?
Yes, there were. So the next thing that we looked at, so we moved on from, okay, well, we couldn't find too much comparing just no product or placebo. So we moved on to looking for RCTs that compared artificial tears to each other. And so the first grouping that we looked at was, we found that a lot of RCTs reported on this validated patient symptom scale called the Ocular Surface Disease Index. It's quite popular in these type of studies. So it's the OSDI. It's a scale of 0 to 100. It's given to the patient and they're ranking different symptoms and scores and environmental triggers. And like I said, 0 to 100, higher being worse. And we were able to find some literature saying that the minimal clinically important difference was about 4.5 to 7.3. In our tool, we chose the lowest cutoff just to, you know, kind of capture any chance that these products are doing anything. That was for patients for mild to moderate dry eyes. So we found 18 RCTs, and these RCTs range from 27 patients to almost 500 who had a moderate to severe dry eyes. And of these, they had 36 different comparisons, and we could only find 3 that were statistically different.
Yeah, so that tells you either they all work really well or they don't work at all. It's really tricky, right? You know.
Yeah, or they're not working any different.
Yeah.
They seem to improve symptoms, but not one of them. Or,
yeah.
Well, we couldn't even find, the thing is we couldn't find the same products being replicated between trials. It was different products for all these different trials.
Yeah.
And so it was complicated that way. So the first one was an industry-funded trial. So it was only a 40 patients, and they found at 3 months that something, a product that contained a cross-linked hyaluronic acid coenzyme Q10 combination improved that OSDI about 16 points compared to only 8 points for hyaluronic acid alone. So,
yeah. So basically, it's saying that that's the, not the effect of the it. That's a coenzyme Q10 that's doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Yes. It must be.
Yeah. You know, that's
exactly.
Yeah.
You've nailed it, James. And you've probably, and weren't you sponsored to say that by the manufacturers of the coenzyme Q10?
I take the 5th.
Betsy, let's move on to the next.
Even though I'm not in the United States.
So the next one was an RCT of 110 patients. And we found at 30 days that the final scores between those two arms of those the products that they were looking at differed by only 3 points. So this was statistically significant, but again, it was only a difference of 3 points. And the thing about this trial is that they did kind of a funny analysis. So they were their baselines differed, and they were looking at the difference at 30 days compared to, I don't know, Mike, you probably can explain this better, compared to, you know, where they started and where they ended and the difference between the two arms. So, you know, the difference in the end was only 3 points. Yes, statistically significant, but not, you know, not knocking it out of the park either for those products.
Yeah, they were, the analogy here is we're going to run a race against each other and you're starting 10 meters ahead of me. We finish running 100 meters and you finish 12 meters ahead of me, and you say, I beat you by 12 meters.
Mm-hmm.
No,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You didn't, the tricks here are the way, and this is true of all scales studies. It can be cut so many different ways to find something that's statistically significant. And let's finish the last one, and we'll talk about how do you interpret three statistically significant results out of from these 18 trials.
Sure. The last one was an RCT of 120 patients, and the 12-week scores for the patients who were on sterile isotonic seawater washes were 4.5 points better than the patients who are on carmelose drops. So this just met that MCID that we had mentioned before for this one. And again, this was so surprising to us because we're using basically saline washes for these patients. And this trial didn't report industry funding. However, they had a picture of the product in the trial. So we were like very suspicious of that as well.
Yeah, yeah. And the authors were, yeah, well, this was it's either Spanish or Italian, and it was
Spanish, yeah.
Talking around the product. So we've got three out of 36 comparisons that are 36 comparisons that are statistically significant, two of which are either borderline or more clinical significance. But whenever I look at this kind of thing, and James, you might have a slightly different view of this kind of stuff, but I always think if you do enough comparisons, you're going to find something by chance alone. And also, when you're doing a lot of small studies of these kind of proprietary products or that kind of stuff, a lot of the results end up not being published. And it would tend towards the ones that were not statistic. If they had found something, they would have almost certainly published it. So I'm not saying there is a lot of unpublished data. We don't actually know. But if you're a betting person, you would say there's got to be studies out there that never made it to the light of day.
Yeah. Although in this case, you guys are talking about 18 studies, only three were shown to be statistically different. So the other ones weren't. So
that's what I'm saying. So yeah. I suspect there's even more than the 15 that weren't. And it just makes me go, what are the chances that any of this is real? Mm-hmm. It's remarkably improbable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No,
given mm-hmm. all of the pluses and minuses and something where you're rating subjective outcomes and all of that kind of stuff.
And I think you guys are very kind in choosing your MCID, because I'd looked at other literature and it was double that. Like instead of being four, it was up in the 7 to 10 range. So, you know.
And they do say that for severe, you know, we did find that severe dry eyes, that you have to achieve a higher, difference in your score to achieve that MCID. You're right. You're absolutely right,
so,
James.
But we're generous things.
I would have said the MCID is 100. You have to have it. You have to start at 100 and it has to go down to zero.
Just the way you are. Yeah, that's why, you know, you'll never be a real peer member.
No.
It's every day's Christmas Day.
Yeah. So, but there were some other stuff on other patient-oriented symptom scores studies, right?
Yeah, there were. So we found other ones that were not OSDI scales. So we wanted to include those as well. We found six. Well, we found more than six, but we decided that we really wanted to focus on ones that would be, you know, maybe with a larger number of patients. So we said they needed to have at least 100 patients so that we could at least have some, you know, it's a quality marker of the studies, because some of them are quite small. And we found one that was statistically significant. So it was an RCT of 135 patients. And these patients were given either hypotonic 0.4% hyaluronic acid versus 0.3% hydroxypropyl methyl cellulose. And what we
first
found,
of all, Betsy, stop for a second. That was dynamite,
wasn't it? I was so proud of myself.
Most people would have said HPMC, but you decided you wanted to show off, and well done.
Yes, I am a pharmacist.
Yeah.
I should know how to pronounce these things, right?
Very good.
So the proportion that attained either mild or resolved symptoms for burning or foreign sensation, as an example, this was measured at 60 days, it was about 19 to 36% more patients than the than on hyaluronic acid. The thing about
this study, on hyaluronic?
On hyaluronic. Yes, versus the HPMC. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. This was an industry sponsored study, so that's something to take note. And two of the authors were employees of the company that sponsored the drops. So it's something to kind of take into consideration as well.
Yeah. I mean, if it was showing that, I mean, that might be something. I mean, you know, if you look at that, might be, you know, that 19 to 36% more patients getting that. But you, Mike, and well, you both, Mike and Betsy, you know, you could choose a certain criteria. Was it mild or resolved or whatever? And it's
pretty. Well, you pick it afterwards.
Yeah, right? Exactly. That's the problem.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It could have been, was it moderate? Did it go from severe to moderate or whatever? It gets very tricky, and it's just a single study.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's all we could find over studies that were a bit larger. So, and yeah, it's not very hopeful.
Yeah, and then there was one final sort of look that you guys did, because I think, and this is a question that does come up, I know when people are trying to choose these, whether they have preservatives or not, because there's apparently the potential, I guess, for an issue, and it sounds so much better if it's preservative free.
Right. And so we actually found a systematic review that looked at this and included, you know, two RCTs and 271 patients, and found there was no difference between preservative versus preservative free artificial tears.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it for the evidence, right?
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Yeah, and we've already talked about some of the limitations, but you know, there's the, you know, industry funding, and Mike, you talked about the chance findings. I mean, it's quite sad how depressing the literature is on this.
It is, but it was also hopeful, because it was like patients can just choose, you know, what works for them, whether it's cost that they have to consider, or the, you know, whether they want.
But we can't even tell them really which one would be to use.
No,
you know, that's true. That's where it gets kind of tricky. And it's interesting that as I was getting prepared for this one, I also had a quick look at, you know, there's that, I think almost all of these would be non-prescription, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
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 Yes.
Cause there's a product called Restasis, or maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong, but it's, you know, the cyclosporine A drops. Have you seen those?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, they're brutally expensive. And I went and looked at some of the evidence around that, and even that product, which has cyclosporine in it, the OSDI changed by 4.
Oh yeah, we didn't look at that one because we had so much to look at
for
the artificial tears themselves.
Yeah. And yet, for this product alone, $1 billion in the States for that product alone. And that's something. I mean, it's either very expensive or a lot of people with dry eyes, or both.
And you know, it just makes me think, I have wasted my life.
Yes, well,
$50 on that.
Yeah,
truck alone.
I know, but I'll just throw another fun thing in with this product. Back in Canada, I think it became generic about 4 years ago, and so then the price would have come down. But in the States, the drug company that owned it, they transferred all of the licensing for that product to the St. Regis Mohawk tribe. And they did that because they thought in court they could say, they could use that as a, use something to do with sovereign immunity, so that they would not have to have their product evaluated by the FDA. And that was obviously denied.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I've heard companies do some weird things. That's a new one on me. They were not able to, it was denied in 2019. And I think it still took another 3 years before in the States that they had a generic version, which is just in February of 2022. So it's a fascinating area, because there are, like we said, there's so many products. And, but why don't, Betsy, why don't you just give a bit of the context?
Sure. So one of the things that I kind of already mentioned is that these products, the cost of these products really vary. So you can get drops for under $10 a bottle, and they can go up to over $50. Typically, the preservative-free ones are more expensive, because they either have specialized packaging to, you know, mm-hmm. so that the product stays intact, or they have like the unit dose. So you get a pack of 30 different little vials that you can use each time. Mm-hmm. So it ends up being more expensive. Guidelines recommend people consider preservative-free products if, of course, you know, someone's reacting to preservatives, mm-hmm. Or if they're wearing contact lenses, or if they're using other eye topicals that have preservative, or just using drops more than 3 to 4 times a day, because apparently the more that you're using a preservative product can actually increase your chance of having irritation to it. So those are just what the guidelines recommend. You know, again, I don't know if there's a lot of evidence around that.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, yeah.
Yeah, we couldn't really find a lot of evidence around that. And neither could we find a lot of evidence around using some of the non-topical interventions, which seem reasonable to do, like warm compresses. I know you can get little eye bags that you put in the microwave and you have them on your eyes for 10 minutes a night, and lid hygiene. So, you know, if it helps patients feel better, go for it. There's nothing, you know, there's no harm in doing that.
Yeah. I mean, I would still say you'd probably start with just saline drops.
Yeah, I go ahead. What were you going to say? I was just going to say, I don't know if you can get saline drops, you know, because everything usually has one of these ingredients in it. But you can definitely get drops that are, you know, between $6 to $10. So I would definitely just start there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I would do. I would say to a patient who was bringing this up, head to the drugstore, pick 3 of the cheapest products that have who have some level of appeal due to their labeling, and then go home and try each one, because I don't think, reading this evidence, that you can say with real confidence that anything is uniquely better.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No.
And they may like the formulation. They may want a more of a gel versus a drop. There's tons of different. Yep. formulations out there they could try. That's what we said in our bottom line is, you know, it should be guided by patient's preference too.
Yeah. You know, it's a very tricky area, but I think you should be able to make an assessment, at least from your own symptoms, certainly, you know, within a few days, maybe a week or so. I don't think you need to go much longer than that.
You need to see if you feel better.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would say that's true. Like, this can be done pretty quickly, mm-hmm. and you can just purchase some cheap ones and see which ones work for you, because like we don't have any evidence that somebody should be paying for the $50 bottle.
No.
Mm-hmm. There's just the chances that these differences are real are so small. And even if they are, the differences are small.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, for a whole bunch of people, and I read a statistic, I have no idea how true, at least a third are not going to get any benefit anyway. You know, no matter what you do. And, you know, it's an annoying thing for sure. But this is great. This is a sort of deep dive you have to do into this sort of stuff, because otherwise, you know, everyone is just left with all of these ingredients and all of the marketing and everything. And how do you make sense of it? And I know you guys were able to do this in just a couple of hours, TFP. So
you guys had put some time into it first, hadn't you, Betsy? Like, I can't remember. You said it would, but it was days of work.
Yeah.
First before.
We went to Mike and we thought this topic wasn't going to happen. And then Mike was able to kind of lead us through it to kind of dig out what exactly we needed. But yes, I did several hours of work to try to find.
I think hours is the wrong. But no, it's great stuff. And I think you guys, you know, I'm not going to say anything good about Mike, but Betsy and Jessica did a great job of putting this together.
They did the majority.
But it's good, Mike, because you are able to sort of weave your way through these things, and that just comes from lots of experience of
this so many times that I see right away. Okay, let's forget everything else and just look at, do patients feel better? Well, then the next thing is, let's look, how does it compare to doing nothing or placebo?
Yeah.
The next question is, do we have a real score for patient outcomes, right? Mm-hmm. And then, like, is there something that's consistently agreed on as a reasonable score for patient outcomes? And then the last piece was, well, let's just look, if we can't find any of those, let's just look for big RCTs.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Mm-hmm. There was
and every one of those things really comes under the category of completely frickin' obvious. But you know, it's
well, you have to kind of have lived it so many times that when you look at these things, you go, oh yeah, because you know, when you've been doing this for goodness knows how many years now, decades, you've confronted these same problems and had the exact same dilemma that Jessica and Betsy had, but mine, when I first had it, was literally 15 to 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I've weeded through it a number of times, and that's why when I look at it, is as James says, it's more obvious to me because I've done it. Like I've had problems like this, and they are nightmares to go through because how they, well, as Betsy was saying, 64 RCTs, because they pulled the individual RCTs to look at, which amazing.
Yeah, but it does, like I said, it does take experience to sort of not be distracted by the shiny new thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That could be the product. It could be this fancy new little scale, because as you know, there's a lot of like
corneal.
The T-butt, you can't, that was a huge distraction. We probably spent 3 days on the T-butt.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't. Well, just the name.
In pharmacies alone though, it's the artificial tear aisle now looks like the cough and cold aisle. There are many options out there. Or if you go to your optometrist, you know, they have the newest and greatest eye drops. And it is very confusing for patients.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. Cause yeah. It is a huge area because it's, you get the sample, right? This is a huge sampling thing.
Yes, it sure is.
You know,
yeah.
But anyway, no, you guys did a great job and, really a useful evaluation, and hopefully people found this interesting. Anything else you want to add, Mike or Betsy?
Nothing for me.
Excellent. So, I think we'll just leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.
Thank you.